probably heard of personal style, but what about soul style? In this season 5 premiere episode with a soul stylist, Carrie Wilde, we're exploring embodiment, our relationships with beauty in our bodies, and how that interconnects with the clothes we wear, and just how we can start to find our own soul style. I thought this was a beautiful conversation to start off the 5th season. We're going to be exploring the depths of personal style in the first series of episodes. Then for the next portion of season 5, we're going to dive deep into fashion's environmental impact with a big focus on the industry's role in our climate crisis. So stay tuned for that and hit follow or subscribe so you don't miss any of what's to come. We have a lot of fantastic guests lined up that I'm really excited about. So as always, the transcript and relevant links of this episode will be in the show notes over on consciouslifeandstyle.com. And I want to remind you to subscribe to our Conscious Edit newsletter at consciouslifeandstyle.com/edit for more sustainable fashion resources. Okay, now let's get on to this week's episode. Sustainability has become little more than a buzzword in fashion.
What would it really take to build a more sustainable, responsible, and equitable fashion system?
That's what we're dedicated to exploring on the Conscious Style podcast. Each Tuesday, you can join me, Elizabeth Joy,
and me, Stella Hertantio, along with our lineup of change-making guests to navigate the sea of greenwashing
and to build a better future for fashion. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Conscious Style podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Carrie Wilde, who is a leader of slow fashion, women's empowerment, and soul style. Carrie has over 20 years of experience in the fashion industry and 18 years as a holistic practitioner. Her body of work meets at the intersection of spirituality, sustainability, and style. She believes that the future of fashion is in returning to a culture of authentic beauty and liberated self-expression. Carrie, to start us off, I'd love to ask you a question that I'm planning to ask all guests in this first series of season 5 of the show, which is, what does conscious style mean to you?
Well, firstly, thank you so much, Elizabeth, for having me on your amazing podcast. It's such an honor to be here today. And yeah, what an amazing question to start. Conscious fashion, it's interesting. I love that term because there's a lot of terms, umbrella terms now banded around. Sustainable fashion, slow fashion, and circular loop, closed loop, all of the different terms that are there. So I really like conscious fashion because I think it taps into the deeper consciousness that's underneath what's happened in the industry. Mm. And everything that I relate to fashion for me comes through this realm of like frequency and energy. I really believe that clothing shifts our reality in terms of our own consciousness. And that can be through style. But also, I think if we purchase clothing in a certain way and maybe we get handed down garments in a certain way, then it's actually shifts our consciousness and how we relate to those clothes. So when I think of conscious fashion, I think of a shift in consciousness. I think of a shift in the systemic reality that we're living in right now when it comes to fast fashion and overconsumption. I really think of this deeper connection and more meaningful value system that is embedded within the way that we relate to clothing. So I think of conscious fashion as a whole shift in consciousness.
Yeah, I love that deeper take on the word conscious. And it's very fitting because You refer to yourself as a soul stylist, which I just absolutely love that term. I've never heard something like that. So can you share what soul style is or what a soul stylist does?
Yeah. So soul style came to me, I would say about 4 years ago, and I was in a meditation. So I'd been a spiritual yogic practitioner for a very long time. And I guess I need to start at the beginning, really. So I started in fashion in my early 20s after a degree in fashion. And I started in the industry in London, and it was very busy. It was a lot of fax machining, I have to say, because it was around the late 90s. So that's how old I am. But, you know, there was a lot of corporate work involved in bringing all of these clothes together and actually manufacturing on that grand scale. So when I first began my career, I started at Arcadia, which was where Topshop was and Dorothy Perkins and a lot of UK brands on the high street lived in that big conglomerate. And I started there kind of very young, very like so happy to be in the industry. And by year one, I think I was just like, oh, wow, this is a lot. And already I felt the kind of burnout of this kind of overstimulated industry for a lot of young people were in, and it was thriving at that time. We're talking about the early noughties. And so what I found is I needed something that was going to help me to cope with this job. I was kind of like, oh my God, my whole system needs something. And, you know, I grew up in a small town in the middle of England, and I didn't, you know, it's not like I grew up in LA where there was lots of different spiritual things around me. And I actually, in my mid-20s, ended up taking a trip to India, and I trained in Reiki healing as a modality, and really as a modality to come home to myself in this really busy career of fashion. And so I had these two polarities happening at the same time. I had this healing bubble where I would heal my friends at the weekend. And then I had this really like heavy duty, hardcore, I'm going to climb that career ladder and I want to become this layer and this layer of management. So it was an interesting, I guess, dichotomy. You know, it's kind of like, yeah. Who am I in these two different, you know, existences? And, you know, through the years, I had a long career in fashion and did go to senior management and did end up traveling the world and seeing the devastation of fast fashion in the factories firsthand. I saw slave labor firsthand. I saw dyes leaching into rivers firsthand. So to have that devastation actually as an embodied reality, like to see that with your own eyes, to see workers with your own eyes, to talk to these people and to carry that almost like a trauma in your system. I also had this coping mechanism, if you like, of all of these practices of yoga and healing and things that were actually supporting me to keep going and keep with my career. But it did get to a point where I felt like I wanted to transition into something much more in the healing world, like in the wellness world. And it wasn't until years later, I was in a meditation and I'd broken away from fashion at this point. And in fact, I'd broken away from the many masks that I was wearing when it came to being professional, being climbing that corporate ladder, being the good girl in all kinds of scenes. And I'd broken away from and really dismantled some of those chunks out of my life. And I was doing a lot of yoga, I was practicing, I was healing, working as a healer. And I was in this meditation and I was sat there and the word adornment started to speak to me. I could just hear this word of adornment. And I was thinking, adornment, what's that word? What is sacred about clothing? And my relationship with clothing changed from that day. And I started to really piece together frequency of clothes. What is embedded within the storytelling within our clothing? How does it feel in my body when I wear a certain piece of clothing? And that took me on a real journey of piecing together this work of soul style. So for me, these two opposites that I was holding at arm's length, saying, well, you're the healer and the embodiment teacher over here, and you're the career fashion person here. It was like everything began to come together and unite in this work. So what I teach now, or what I share with clients now, is I take them on a journey through the deeper aspects of who they are in a soul level. So there's a lot more kind of, I guess, like a connection to spirit, but you don't have to have that connection. It's just about finding out who you are and then take them on a journey of creativity, to really understand how this second skin wishes to feel and wishes to reveal itself. So my mission is to really help accomplished people, leaders, really feel that they can embody their own presence through style and through conscious fashion and lead with their essence.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful story. And I feel like a lot of us can relate to that, having maybe two separate realities or parts of ourselves or parts of our life, and maybe learning how to bring that together and integrate it a little bit more. I mean, I talk about how with my journey, I was very interested in fashion and I wanted a career in fashion when I was little. But I also really cared about sustainability and human rights. And then I was confronted with the realities of fashion's impact on people and the planet. And conscious style was sort of born out of that combination. So I think that's really fascinating.
Love
and
that.
You've used the word embodiment a few times. And could you share what embodiment is and how that relates to what we wear?
Yes, I'd love to. So when, I don't know about you, but when I first started to get dressed, nobody asked me to check in with how it feels. Everybody kind of said, how does that look? Show me how that looks, Kerry. And I would sort of hold my skirt out for my mum and be like, this is how it looks. And it would be like, yes or no. So the inquiry for me, being a teacher of movement for the last 10 years, so teaching yoga and embodiment practice, which is coming into the deeper aspects of the energy in the body. So really embodiment means working with the body, the wisdom of the body. So it's coming out of the mind and out of the kind of cognitive settings of what the mind is speaking and really dropping that down into the intelligence and the well of wisdom that's within the body. And so when we, you know, like when you go to yoga and suddenly you're like, I can't even remember what I was thinking before I was coming to class. It's that kind of thing. And what I noticed when I started thinking about adornment and thinking of clothing as sacred is that nobody ever taught me to ask myself, well, how do I want to show up today? What would feel really delicious to wear? It was more about how does it look and am I going to fit in with the environment that I'm going into? Am I going to be accepted by people that I come up with, you know, come in touch with today? And so I was never inquiring about how my body feels in relationship to style and clothing. And bringing those pieces together has helped me to see the disconnect that exists for many, many women. I mainly work with women, but I do work with a few men as well. And I think it is there for men as well. So I'm going to include them there. But I think especially for us women, because we kind of lose the connection with how we think we should show up or how we think we should show up. And then actually how it feels to be so in your body when you're wearing something and show up as you without the conditioning that we've grown up with resounding in the mind somewhere. So when we access the body in relationship to style, what we're doing is we're kind of shutting down this subconscious mind. I mean, there's a lot of practices that go into this and there's a deeper journey, but in a kind of a quick way, it's really about allowing yourself to be so in the body that you can't even access this conditioning that exists telling you how you should show up and what you should wear. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. It's such a different way of thinking about clothes and what we wear because it is such a visual art or visual representation of ourselves. We can get caught up in how it looks and what other people will think. And of course, that matters to an extent, depending on the specific place that you are at that time, maybe. But to tap into how it makes us feel, I mean, that's just such a deeper way of looking at clothes that I think doesn't get talked about enough, if really at all.
No.
But I feel like that can lead to such better happiness and fulfillment in what we wear and what we have in our closets and what we buy. You know, I think a lot of this impulse shopping, at least speaking from my own experience, came from wanting to look a certain way and hop on the latest trend to fit in and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I think it's an important thing to consider on our journey to slow fashion and conscious style. So thank you for sharing that. And on your website, you dive into 4 soul style pillars. Can you walk us through what these pillars are and how you go about helping people achieve or find their soul style?
Yeah. So the pillars are related to my embodiment map. And what that looks like is that people come to me with a certain shape. I would say when I talk about the shape, I'm talking about the way they hold themselves, what kind of limiting beliefs are entrenched in what they think about themselves, their body image, their self-expression, their sense of style, and also their connection to self. So the shape, when they first come in, may feel a certain way. And what I notice in this work is that, like you said, not many people are talking about somatics or the deeper embodied states and style. So it's quite rare to hear those two coming together. So when people step into the work, it's not necessarily something that they've looked at before or gone through a journey with that before. And this, so that it's sort of shining a little torch on how do you really feel about your style and asking those deeper questions. And so I begin the first pillar, which is being with creativity. So it's really understanding where that person is in terms of their connection to their feminine, because a lot of this journey with soul style is connected to the essence of the feminine, and that relates to creativity, pleasure, sensuality, and those, and artistry, really. So I take them on this journey of really inquiring how they feel about all aspects of their life and how style is impacting different areas of their life. And it's so illuminating because as we start with seeing how looking at just your sense of style or your real core expression of self in an outer layer is making you feel. And, you know, many times women are just feeling that they are low priority or they're not feeling seen. I work with a lot of women that have just either had a baby or they're in midlife. And so they're in these transition points where they're feeling unseen and invisible. And so this beginning process is a process of just really understanding where that person sits in terms of their creativity. So the second stage is soul embodiment. And it's really then looking at who they really are as an individual. And I work with astrology there, and I work with human design. And this gives you like a snapshot of the soul blueprint. It really gives you a really amazing way in to see who you are in terms of your energetics and the way that you relate to the outer world. So we start with reading. I've got an amazing reader on board called Julia Aquino. She's insane. She's like a guru of this stuff. And through learning more about who you are, we then tease through, there's like an awakening that happens in that point where people start to understand that there might have been parts of themselves that they've shut down or repressed somewhere. And they're like, they want to bring back to life, maybe through style, but also maybe through the body and maybe through how they feel. So we start to work with those shut down places, which are really interesting. And I sometimes look at that like in archetypes, like of who we are. But sometimes it's just, it might be like, I used to wear the color red and now I don't. It could be something as tangible as that. And so it's like, okay, why is that? And then there's a little deeper a questioning. So that's the soul embodiment stage. That's pillar two. And then pillar three is soul style strategy. So then unique to every single person that comes through is how we're going to formulate some kind of strategy to deal with whatever they're presenting in that moment. And that is really different for many people. I think what ties together those people for me in the work is that they want to develop and strengthen their ability to hold their own presence and hold their own light and be able to shine that through their clothing and through who they and through their embodiment. So there are in that pillar, the soul style strategy, there's embodiment techniques that are given to that person, and then also color analysis, body shape analysis, all of the kind of foundational styling strategies that really help people to buy more consciously, to really understand what fits them, what's going to actually look good in an outfit together, how they can use their wardrobe in a more circular way. So if they buy one thing, is it going to work with other items? So that's part of the strategy piece, which is like the fundamentals of learning about clothing. It's not something that we get taught in schools. And I think that should be there. How clothing works, what color, what are your colors that are going to suit you, so that there's a lot more of a streamlined approach to buying instead of just getting out there. So stage four is the transformation. And this is really the implementation phase. This is when the client will go out and try things on and come back and we'll go through it together. And it's like this trying and testing phase of implementing some of the techniques and also some of the practices that we've, you know, have come through the journey. And it's actually what I find then through the embodiment map, they actually become a different shape. And through the way they hold their body, the way they move their body and move with clothing, it's just like a new being. It's like a new person walking in the room. And I love to witness that kind of transformation because it feels deep, because it's involved in the body rather than just a shift that's just happening in the mind. So yeah, that's the journey. They're the pillars and they really help to anchor the work. Yeah.
If you've ever wanted to start mending but weren't sure how to get started, you're going to want to hear this. I am co-hosting a Visible Mending introductory workshop with Slow Stitch Club on Sunday, January 29th. Learn how to do visible mending with darning and get your mending questions answered. You can learn more and get tickets via the link in the episode description or by heading to consciouslifeandstyle.com/mending. Use the code PODCAST for 50% off. Again, that link is consciouslifeandstyle.com/mending, and you can use the code PODCAST for half off the already affordable ticket price. I hope to see you there. Do you want to start or grow a career in sustainable fashion? Find your next career opportunity on Conscious Fashion Collective's job board at consciousfashion.co/jobs. You'll find everything from internships to advanced roles and everything in between in a variety of fields within vetted sustainable fashion brands and organizations. You can also sign up for the Conscious Fashion Collective job newsletter to get career opportunities delivered to your inbox every other week. And if you work for a brand or organization that's hiring, you can also submit your job opening. All of that can be found at consciousfashion.co/jobs, and the links will be in the episode description. You have a lot of experience in sort of this wellness and healing space, and you've bridged that into your work. And I think about all of the sort of harmful standards of beauty, which we definitely see playing out with fashion and fashion marketing that women are sort of faced with, grew up with. So how do you help clients navigate that and maybe heal some of those relationships to style and beauty?
I always ask clients what does beauty mean to you? Because it's such an individual inquiry, like, and it's experiential, right? It's not what we think it is. So we talk about beauty industry and we talk about these optimal beauty standards, but really they have something that have been, you know, been programmed and set into the culture to actually make us feel that we actually, Naomi Wolf says in her book, The Beauty Myth, she talks about the fact that it's more about prescribing a certain behavior for women. And if we look at what the beauty standard does, it actually shrinks women's power. That's what it does. It keeps us very distracted, looking at what's wrong, what we need to fix, and not what's right in front of us. And really, when we think about beauty, it's that experiential reciprocal exchange with something that makes us feel alive. There's an aliveness to beauty. There's a kind of a natural quality to beauty. But I don't mean natural in the aesthetic term. I mean it in, like, it just is. And there's no fixing or changing or distorting. It's just so wonderful. It's really hard to put into words, right? When I think of beauty, I'm like, It's like so in my body. I can't even, like find the words. I'm like, I just want to like feel it.
Yeah. But I feel like that's a takeaway in and of itself, that it is difficult to articulate. And it is maybe more about a feeling, a deeper sort of sense, so to speak, of like what beauty is. And I think it's very difficult to like unlearn. And definitely, I'm personally still very much in that journey. But I feel like just becoming aware of all the ways that certain specific beauty standards are pushed upon us, or like just pushed out to us. Yes. And yeah, I think like I'm watching right now this Victoria's Secret like expose docuseries on Hulu. Wow. And it's been really eye-opening, like even some of the models saying they felt uncomfortable being on that Victoria's Secret Angels runway. They felt like exposed and uncomfortable. And, you know, models talking about the wild and really unhealthy extreme diets that they went on before the runway. And it's like, who is it serving at the end of the day?
Exactly.
You know, it's not even maybe serving the women who are being projected up. I mean, it's serving them more than maybe the women watching, but at the end of the day, it's serving a lot of times those beauty or fashion billionaires that are usually men. And That was like, I feel like a big revelation to me in my sustainable style journey was that, why is the biggest bra company in the world run by a man? It's kind of sort of interesting. And why does he get to set the beauty standards that women subscribe to? It's very, very interesting, to say the least.
Totally. And relating that to fashion as well, like how many times have we bought something because we wanted to feel like we met that standard? You know, how many times have we seen something on somebody else or in a magazine and felt that I need that, I need to feel like that, I need to meet that standard, and meeting that standard is going to get me what I want in this society. It's going to make me more successful, and then I will be seen, then I will be recognized, then I will not be invisible. And the thing is, it's a losing game, because many times that thing, the dress, the piece of jewelry, the watch, the bag, whatever the thing is, really isn't bringing us into full connection in an embodied way. It might be a great quick fix. It might be like, you know, I look good. And looking good is great. Like, that's also something that changes careers. It changes lives. When you feel like you look good, it gives you more confidence, right? And so there's nothing wrong with that. And so that's not the work. It's not like but it's about something that means something to you and that is a unique, almost like talisman or significant item that's going to give you strength. And it's not necessarily for anybody else. It's not for the man that owns Victoria's Secrets. You know, it's not for anybody else to validate you. It's actually this self-intimacy and self-ownership and agency of who you are and who you get to be in this world. And clothing is so intrinsically linked to that, that, and I just sometimes think, well, I know actually that it's not talked about enough how much it's entrenched.
Yeah. Often when we buy things like clothes or beauty products, we're buying into this idea that if we buy this, we'll look a certain way and therefore have all these things come to us, whether that's success or attention or love or, you know, like it's really, really, it's so layered, you know, and I definitely bought into that when I was a young girl, like buying Victoria's Secret products. And I thought that if I wore this thing, I would be seen as beautiful or it was like really messed up actually that I thought I could, you know, we talk about, well, we can't buy our way into sustainability or something like that. But I also think fashion tries to convince us that we can buy our way into beauty, buy our way into acceptance, buy our way into attracting our mate.
Yes.
To put it in like very human survival terms, I guess.
Yeah. It's very seductive. It pulls you in. Yeah. There's a difference here that we're talking about when you're wearing something that is really flatters your form. Like, you know, that fabric is working for you. You know, the cut looks amazing on your body shape. You've got the right size. You don't know how many women I work with just don't wear the right size clothing for them for many different reasons, but they're wearing the right size, right? They're wearing the colors that exude who they are and bring more personality and radiance and vitality to who they are. That is when you're walking in this arena of soul style and you're carrying yourself because, and maybe you're wearing pieces that are sentimental to you. You've had a deeper inquiry about why you want to wear something of that aesthetic. And you're connecting these dots to maybe the energy I call the creative muse, like the energy of something that inspires you, that's like a work of art. And maybe that color in that art you bring into a top. And so when you wear that top, you're like, I'm like that Monet piece of art. And you feel that resonance to why you've connected those things. And so when you're walking in that soul style, it's magnetic. People do go, whoa. Like partners do come into your life. Like you do get that pay rise. Things happen. And that's just this pure magnetism, but it's not. The other extreme of it is wearing clothing that may tick some of the boxes, but in somewhere inside, there's a real disconnect. You know that you're putting yourself into that particular style to get something. You want attention, or you are grabbing at this energy that's kind of the standard, and you're opting into that. So somewhere there's a disconnect inside, and you can see it. You can see like amazingly dressed people just not exuding that radiance. There's a kind of a veneer, I would say, like a veneer or a, what do you call it? Like a veil. It feels like there's something not connecting. I don't know what it is, but it doesn't feel like them. So it's very subtle, some of this work, because, you know, it's a deeper journey. And it's a deeper journey for, like, really, I work generally one-on-one, because it's more like a journey for people to go through the process. And when people do go through that process, what I find is that their buying habits change dramatically from week one. Week one, like I do say, have a detox from buying, and they don't want to anyway because they're so excited by what's going to happen at the end of the transformation. But what I find is that people then are much more conscious about writing a wish list, really understanding how to put a closet of pieces together so that they actually can come together into outfits and it's not just singular pieces randomly being bought. So it does affect sustainability because the people that I work with, is they're much more inclined to buy things that hold value and meaning and integrity for them and their style codes is what I call it.
Yeah, right. Buying for a deeper connection, which means that you want to find something that you will want to hold on to for longer. And when you put that upfront investment into finding that piece, you also want to keep it longer and maybe build more meaning with it. Like we had a fashion psychologist on the show, Dr. Dion Terralongo, who spoke about how in this sort of disposable clothing culture that we're living in right now, clothes are coming in and out of our lives so quickly. A lot of people buying clothes just for the weekend or for one or two occasions. And there isn't even that opportunity to develop a connection with that piece. So of course, people don't feel any sort of remorse or any bad feeling by just tossing it or dumping it in a trash bag at Goodwill because they never developed a connection to that piece in the first place. They never intended to develop a connection with it. And I think that is really interesting to think about in the context of your work and bridging the consciousness of our clothes with also our deeper consciousness within us. And I've never heard it spoken about in those terms, but it's, I think, really important to consider.
Yes. Yeah.
And you spoke a little bit about our relationships with our bodies and what we wear. And you have a masterclass called The Body Keys that relates to this. So I was hoping you could speak a little bit more to that. How do our beliefs and feelings around our bodies relate to what we wear and maybe even how and what we buy?
Yeah. So The Body Keys is a foundational workshop that I teach that's centered around body shape. And so giving more fluidity to body shape analysis. Because when I work with people, there's normally some foundational knowledge that they have around what shape they are. And normally it's fitting into fruits or it's kind of fruits or shapes. And kind of we get stuck in like, oh, I'm a pear and I'm an apple. Well, actually, no, I'm just this amazing body. You know, like I'm moving, I'm evolving. I change through my cycle. Every week I'm a different size. It's okay. Like we can shapeshift. I believe that we're not a static form. So the body keys for me, I also teach on the KIB system in there, which I give my nuance around the KIB system because that was invented
by... And what is the KIB system?
KIB is, he was a stylist in the 80s and he wrote a book called Metamorphosis, David KIB. And the system puts you into 12 archetypes. So it's more, it involves more about the flesh and the structure of your bones. And I find that system really interesting because what it allows for is you can look at the kind of yang in the body, like the straight lines, or you can look at the yin, like the soft curves. So it gives a little bit more of a languaging that feels a bit more progressive than some of the old school shape analysis. So in the body keys, I talk about some of the main KIB theory. And then I also add a bit of nuance around energetics of the body shape, which just breathes a bit of new life into thinking about what our body is. And for me, it's like I expressed about the sizing, and I think the body shape is something, and body image is something that is so personal and almost this quiet work that we as women are doing and carrying, because in our culture, there is this programming really that we're still dismantling. And so what I engage with, not in the Body Keys foundational masterclass, but definitely through the one-to-one kind of resources and work and my art of woman, is to create practices that engage your body. And so you see your body in a different way. such as devotional massage. And these ways of affirming your body is here, like before you're getting dressed. Many times we get dressed from the mind. And so even then, sometimes we're not even thinking, are we? It's not even a conscious thing. It's like, I just need to get out the door. So slowing it down and coming back to the body in these kind of devotional ways before dressing has been revelationary for some of my clients. So yeah, the body holds the key, as has been written. Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering when you were talking about body shapes, what you were referring to, because we do often have this image of pear shape or banana or apple, comparing people's bodies to fruits, which I've always found a bit strange.
Yeah.
So I like that different take on that.
Yeah, the Kib system has its, you know, some problems. Like, I'm a woman of color, and I feel like that women of color are not really, you know, seen in that system as much. Mm. So there needs to be, I think he's writing a new book, so that's great. But for me, I think even in the whole system, being othered because of my color, but also because of the cultural shape that I am, has been an interesting path in terms of buying fashion that is made for a Western body shape. So.
Yeah. And so that kind of leads into, I guess, a more logistical question that I was thinking of while you've been speaking about some of these things, which is like, when we go out to buy something, when we are shopping for something for our wardrobe, how can we keep these concepts of embodiment and body shape and soul style? Like, how can we keep that in mind, and how clothes make us feel? Like, what should we know about that when we want to buy something at a thrift store or at a boutique or something like that?
I think the first thing is slowing down, because we're all in such a rush and we're busy to the extreme these days, and we don't have enough time in our day to sit and consider. And I think slowing down and treating buying as in a conscious way is this way of dropping from the mind, because the mind can tell us all the things that we've seen on Instagram and we want to buy that day. But if we drop it down into the body and notice where that desire is in the body, it might just be that we actually are hungry, or we need a glass of water. It can be like, actually, there's a fundamental need that's physiological going on. And so I think sometimes we buy out of that necessity of the urgency sort of in the mind. And so I think what we can do is to slow it down, to breathe, to put our hands on our body, and to just trust that we know if that is something that is still present, you know, after we've slowed down and taken those breaths, maybe then put it in your phone, put it in your notes, and write down pink dress, or save it in your saved on Instagram, or whatever the way, wherever you navigate that tendency to purchase, I would save it and put it on a list and start creating this considered wish list for pieces. Also, with that considered wish list, you can look in your closet and see what exists already. Have a look at the ways in which you can be creative and find a playfulness in bringing together your old things. Yeah, because it doesn't have to be about buying new, as you know. And so when we're thinking of this soul style, we're not doing a Marie Kondo and getting rid of the whole thing. We're actually saying, well, actually, there's some things here. You know, there's still some things in my collection that I like. And we're tapping in, you know, checking in with the body and attuning to what still feels relevant now. So we can do that at any time. I think it's just starting to inquire more deeply. And the first question can be, how do I feel about my body shape? How do I feel about my body image? How do I feel about my size? And that's like three questions, right? And that could take you on a journey. And that's like a top layer inquiry. And when we start to really ask ourselves those fundamental questions, we can then start to understand what's making us buy things that we don't wear. Why are we not bringing more of who we really are to the table? You know, I've got this kind of beautiful ruby red.
Stunning. If you're watching the YouTube video version, you can see it. If you're listening to the audio, definitely check out the YouTube video to see Carrie's top. It's beautiful.
And this was purchased at a kind of antique sale. And the woman that passed is a local artist. And I know her frequency is embedded in this clothing. You know, she was an amazing powerhouse woman and artist and creative. And so I think it's knowing that when you purchase, it can feel so right. Many times we purchase things and we're not sure. We ask friends. I even had clients that were allowing their husbands to buy for them because they didn't know. They were taking the responsibility of knowing away from themselves. And so the interesting thing is that sometimes these, you know, ways of purchasing is wrapped up in low self-worth, low self-esteem, and things like this. So actually tuning into that and where that comes from can be another way of seeing some of the patterns with buying.
Yeah.
And I was just one of those women. I had a mountain of clothes. I worked in fashion, so you can imagine every sample sale, I shopped at the weekend. I worked in fashion. I had clothing. I think I moved so many times, but I moved with 10 bin bags that were not part of the wardrobe. They were just literally these sample sale goodies that one day I will wear them. And I had nothing to wear. But that, even just that statement, I have nothing to wear, but really I had a whole wardrobe full of pieces. Mm-hmm. And I was crying on my bed on a mountain of clothes, telling my friends, I'm not going out tonight. You go without me. I don't look right. I can't do it. So I came from that place of complete disconnect with who I was, how clothing made me feel. They made me feel like I wasn't good enough. They made me feel like I was never going to fit in. They made me feel unhappy. I had all the clothes. Mm-hmm. And so coming from that place is a really big part of like why I do what I do now.
Yeah, that's incredible to hear about that journey, because I think those feelings that you felt are very relatable to many of us. We all have to wear clothes, and some of us don't have, maybe, or didn't have the best relationships with that for a variety of reasons. So on that note, if people want to work with you and unlock their soul style, how can they do that?
Yeah, so the best way is to, you can find me on Instagram. So I'm the soul stylist __. And you can also join my newsletter, which is on my website. And I'm www.kerrywild.com. I'm sure you'll include everything in the show notes. And, you know, I generally work one-to-one, but I am going to move into a few more group things next year. So just keep following, and I'd love to hear from you. And I love to hear from women and how they feel anyway about their style. So please do get in touch.
Yeah, definitely. All those links will be in the show notes of this episode. Carrie, thank you so much for this past hour. This has been incredibly insightful, and I'm going to be thinking about it for weeks. So I do have one more question for you before I let you go, which is, what would a better future for fashion look like to you?
Oh, a better future for fashion for me would look like women and men dressing in a sacred way that connects who they are internally to how they present externally. And I would love for the future of fashion to be really about the artistry of adorning ourselves, and how that can be a beautiful ritual, and actually how the clothing can hold meaning and value.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. Subscribe or follow the Conscious Style Podcast for more episodes like this one. It would also mean so much if you could take a moment to give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or rating on Spotify. This helps our content on conscious fashion reach more people. Have some thoughts after listening to this episode? Let's continue the conversation over on Instagram. You can DM at Conscious Style. For more slow fashion resources, subscribe to our free weekly newsletter, The Conscious Edit, at consciouslifeandstyle.com/edit. Subscribers also get access to a 12-page roundup of sustainable fashion resources upon signing up. Again, the link is consciouslifeandstyle.com/edit. The link is also below in the episode description. Thanks again for listening today. There will be another episode next Tuesday. In the meantime, you can check out our backlog of the 70-plus episodes we've already published. Bye for now, and talk to you again soon.